When you live out in the country, far from town and fire hydrants, you want to know someone's going to help you out if a fire breaks out. Josephine County, outside of Grants Pass, has several rural fire districts, but they don't cover all the rural areas. There are yawning spaces in between. A county advisory vote in the spring indicated voter interest in establishing a fire district, and there have been moves at the state capitol in Salem to move in that direction as well. Let's catch up on the efforts. Our guest is Senator Herman Bertschinger of Grants Pass, a Republican, and therefore also the minority leader of the Oregon State Senator. Senator, thanks for joining us today.
Well, good morning. How are you today?
I'm doing well. Yourself?
I'm doing fine. Thank you. Gorgeous day in Southern Oregon.
Indeed. So, under the Southern Oregon sun, there are some islands of district protection that we talked about in Josephine County. Outside of those districts, who provides the fire and rescue services?
Well, currently, there's two private companies that provide it, but by contract, and not everybody contracts with them.
In other words, you have to subscribe to the service to get it?
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. And so is that how good a business model is that for the two private companies?
Well, it's probably okay for the two private companies, but you know, it's a model that really doesn't work real well. And to prove that is it's hardly used in the country anymore. In fact, I think we're almost the last place to use it. Most everybody else has fire districts.
That was the next question. If this is fairly typical for some of the less populated counties in Oregon, and I'm hearing probably not.
No, and across the country, you know, most people don't realize that most of our structural firefighters in the United States are volunteer.
Really? Okay. So this is the rural fire protection districts have some volunteers in addition to any paid staff.
Yeah, they're mostly made up of volunteer, maybe some paid, you know, some paid, some volunteer is how most of the districts are made up.
So as I look at the map and I look at the figures some people have provided, it looks like something like 300 square miles of Josephine County with no official fire district.
Yeah, a lot of that's in trees, though, so it doesn't need one because Oregon Department of Forestry or U.S. Forest Service do the protection on. But as far as structures, there's a pretty good chunk just outside the Grants Pass city limits that is not in a fire district.
And is that the major concern then, that particular area?
Yeah, those are the highly populated areas in Josephine County that are not covered by a fire district.
So there was that advisory vote earlier this year, Measure 1789, about forming a rural fire district, which passed with Josephine County voters 65 to 35. That seems like a strong sentiment, but it's not the only step. There are several others before such a district would come to be. Is that right?
That's correct. And, you know, fire districts need to be, you know, generated by the public. And if they want it, then they can vote to create the district, draw the boundaries, and appoint a board, and then the board can make recommendations on what the assessments will be and stuff like that. So that's pretty much the model.
All right. So it seems like there needs to be perhaps some state moves as well. You and Representative Dwayne Stark of Grants Pass had a hand in Senate Bill 1028, which would have had an impact had it passed. What was the basic idea in that bill?
That bill was just to, you know, create some funding to help them start it up. That funding was placed in a different bill. The particular bill you just named did die, but the mechanism to create a funding source for a startup did pass in a different bill.
Was that the so-called Christmas tree bill at the end of the session?
Yes, it is.
All right. And I noticed
reconciliation bill, Christmas tree bill, whatever you want to call it.
Well, for the folks who don't know politics that well, why is it called a Christmas tree bill, Senator Bertschinger?
Well, you know, the bill is made up of a lot of money going to different projects in the districts that, you know, all the senators and representatives put in. And then it goes to the Capital Construction Committee, and they kind of sort through it and, you know, prioritize, and then we see how much money we have, and so then it's allocated.
Senator Herman Bertschinger, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, he is a Republican senator from Grants Pass and the Senate Minority Leader. You can join the conversation on the exchange at 800-838-3760 over the phone. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. All right, so then we have this affirmative vote. Again, it's just an advisory vote, not actually the creation of a district, but, you know, would you consider the creation of a district? Basically a 2-to-1 margin in Josephine County, and this pot of money to allow the state fire marshal to issue grants to rural fire districts that are newly formed. What happens now?
Well, it's going to have to be proposed to go on the ballot and the citizens to vote for it. Like I said, this is a citizen initiative process that the citizens actually create the district and create the taxing mechanism. It's not done by elected officials.
Is there anything else that has to happen at the legislative level to help things happen, perhaps in the short session next year?
No. All the statutes are in place for these types of creations. So, like I said, it's public-generated, and so it's up to the public.
So, Senator, while you're here, why don't we look back to the long session this year? This is your first long session as Senate Minority Leader. Can you give us a sense of overall feelings about how the session went?
It was pretty challenging.
To put it mildly, I think.
Yeah, the state's very, very divided, and we seem to have a governor that, in my opinion, behaves like a legislator and is representing a single district. And I hope that you'll start to realize that as a governor, you represent all the people in Oregon. You need to take all those voices in consideration on the different issues.
So talk about the kinds of things that you see the governor supporting that adds to that view on your part that she seems to represent a single district. What kinds of legislation that emerged with the governor's guidance are you most displeased with?
Well, the cap and trade was really a bad policy for not only rural Oregonians, but ironically, lower wage income people in urban areas, which wasn't talked about much, but they were going to get clobbered by that legislation too.
What were the mechanisms you saw in that legislation that would have clobbered them?
Higher energy costs. So, most people in urban Portland heat with natural gas. They'd see that their monthly bill skyrocket. Even though they say there were provisions in the bill that you could apply for assistance, that's only if the money's available, and there's no guarantee that the money will be available. So, just anything to do with energy, your electric, fuel for your car to get around, goods and services coming into Portland that you purchase, that will all go up. So, I think the lower-income working folks would really be challenged by some of this stuff.
Was there nothing in cap and trade as written you think that would have made it move slowly enough to allow the market time to adjust?
Well, no, because you're a state of 4 million people and you're competing against other states and other countries. So if your cost of business is higher, it puts you in a position where you have the ability not to compete with other places that don't have these additional costs.
I want to come back to cap and trade, but I do want to ask about the positive side of things. If there's anything that emerged from the legislative session from your perspective that you were pleased with.
Well, we had a pretty good budget. Oregonians were extremely generous to the state treasury, and I think a lot of good things happened with that. You'll see a significant kicker come out. I think it's close to $700 per filer is the average. I'm not saying everybody's going to get $700. That's an average. And we got the budget balanced and the state's moving forward. We got a little more money to the schools. I just hope they use it wisely and that we can actually see some changes in performance from the public school system. That's really a challenging issue for me. I just worry about, throwing more money at the public schools and then wind up with the same outcomes. That would be very disappointing. So I'm going to be optimistic and hope that additional money helps with the performance of the public schools. Those are some of the things that came out of it.
Just nobody's clapping their hands expecting a check, the kicker will be provided as a credit on next year's taxes. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. All right. Herman, we're talking to Senator Herman Bairdschiger from Grants Pass here on the Jefferson Exchange. He is the Senate Minority Leader in the Oregon Legislature. Phone lines are open at 800-838-3760. Email box jx@jeffnet.org. I'm sure somebody's going to want to know about the two Republican walkouts. Tell us about how that started, where that originated, the idea for walking out the first time.
Well, denying a quorum. I don't call it a walkout. I call it a denial of quorum. It's been used by the Democrats in the past.
It has.
And it's a mechanism that kind of stops everything. So, you know, at the beginning of the session, we had the rent control bill, and it flew through the House and Senate. They would not recognize any amendments by the Republicans at all, not anything. And so that was the first sign that the Democrats did take their supermajority status very, very seriously. When we got into the cap-and-trade discussion, again, that was the same thing that was starting to develop, same attitude. And the Republicans worked really, really hard. In fact, right up to the time of the denial of quorum that evening, we worked until 7 o'clock with the governor's office, and they wouldn't accept anything. And so the caucus had to make up their mind to stop it, you know. And after we've seen all those people come to the Capitol, I think it was the largest protest we've ever seen at the Capitol. It was obvious that rural Oregon didn't want nothing to do with that, and they hired us to represent them, and they said no to cap and trade, so we had to do what it took to stop it.
On the issue of cap and trade, or basically any legislation at the state level dealing with climate change, is there an approach you favor, or you just don't think this is something the state legislature should be moving on?
You know, I think the state should be moving on things like carbon reduction, new technology, and we should be embracing that and trying to foster that. I think that's, you know, the state should be doing that. As far as climate change, you know, if you really look at that bill and you really see what the experts said, it wasn't going to do anything for the climate at all. That's a fallacy. They love to name it that. It's a catchy name, and everybody grasps onto it because it's the talk of the town right now. But, you know, we're 4.2 million people. We're about 3% of the country's population. And when the experts say that the benefit of that cap and trade bill would be unmeasurable, you kind of scratch your head and say, gosh, why do we want to turn everybody's life upside down, our economy upside down, for something we can't even measure? We don't even know what it's going to do.
So was there anything in the cap and trade bill that did appeal? You mentioned carbon reduction and new technology. Are there portions of the bill that was delivered that you would consider supporting?
You know, there was some flakes in there that would incentivize electrification of vehicles and moving towards new technology and stuff like that. House Bill 2007, we call it the diesel bill. That'll help modernize trucks in the metro area using the Volkswagen money that we got from the Volkswagen lawsuit. So those are good things, you know. And like I said, we ought to embrace, you know, anytime we can do something better for ourselves and for our environment, we ought to do it. We just shouldn't be doing something that we don't know is going to work, but we do know it's really going to upside down the economic cart of Oregon.
I know you're just 6 weeks past the legislative session, Senator Bearsugar, but you have another one coming up, the short session, early next year, and there's always the possibility that the cap-and-trade bill in some form will see the light of day again there. Are you prepared to do the same sorts of things to block its passage?
You know, it's hard to speak to hypotheticals. I think a lot of Democrats seen how much pushback, and being that close to the election cycle, I think they may be hesitant to bring that type of legislation back again.
I want to talk about Senator Brian Boquist of the Dalles, who made comments about the state police coming after senators who had denied a quorum, as you put it. Regardless of the reaction, do you think you could have been more judicious in his comments?
Well, you know, there's a lot of things that get said on both sides of the aisle, and so there's a lot of criticism for a lot of people. Senator Boquist's remarks seem to be highlighted. But I think he took it very seriously that when the governor threatens you with arrest, I think he took that very seriously. And I think that was a very poor choice of the governor and majority leader Jenny Burdick to do all the mass amount of threatening, you know, and none of it is legal, including having us arrested by the state police.
Is there a moral equivalency in your mind between arrest and detention in jail, for example, and arrest and return to workplace?
Well, what are they arresting? Let me ask you something. You have to commit a crime before you're arrested. So just what crime has anybody committed?
That is not for me to decide.
Yeah, none. And so it's, they didn't seem to have a problem doing it in 2001. It was okay, but Republicans do it, and all of a sudden it's not okay. We're going to arrest you. We're going to fine you. We're going to take it out of your wages, take it out of your per diem. All of the above is illegal. But it made the papers.
Which I noticed that there's been an effort to repay the fines of the state senators who left by additional campaign contributions.
Well, who says we're going to pay any fines? They're trying to figure out how to even fine us yet.
Mm-hmm. So, Senator Birchinger, is the relationship poisoned between Democrats and Republicans in the Oregon Senate? I mean, is there going to be an ability to work together when people come back together next winter?
Well, I think there's been a lot of relationships burned. I mean, when you get threatened as much as we have and wanted posters put out on the Internet from Democrats or Democrat supporters and stuff, I think, yeah, there's been a lot of damage done, a lot of damage.
What will you bring to the short session next winter? What kinds of things do you and your fellow Republicans in the Senate want to see get done, knowing, of course, that you're in the minority and don't have much power to affect legislation other than the way you did?
The short session was designed to balance the budget. That's what we should be doing. As far as policy, policy should be left for the long session. And the reason why, you try to do major policy in 35 days, it doesn't get done, and the citizens get cut out of the entire process. The reason I say that is 2 weeks after you're into session, in the short session, they go what they call one-hour notice. So that's, they only have to post things 1 hour before they happen. Well, that's literally impossible for any citizen to come to the Capitol to testify on the different issues. During a long session, you give a lot more. You have a minimum of 24 hours, but usually you give weeks of notice before issues are going to come, and Oregonians have the ability to come from the Capitol from all over the state. So the short session, if you go back and study your history, the Peter Courtneys and the John Kitzhoppers and all the people that supported that all said it's to balance the budget, shouldn't be working on policy. Well, as soon as we've started this short session, guess what? It's been policy after policy jammed through. And I think that needs to stop, or the short session needs to go away, one or the other. So it'll be interesting to see what the conversation's going to be.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any conversations with the people at the other party in the legislature when the legislature is not in session?
Oh yeah, I'm talking all the time. In fact, I got a meeting with the governor tomorrow.
All right. So and is that cordial? I mean, do you get along in person and not say the kinds of things that you say about each other in the media?
You know what? I've got thick skin. My goal is to make Oregon a better place for Oregonians. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff I didn't like, but I can't let that cloud out trying to do the right thing. So, I'm still working with everybody, and we still have pretty decent relationships. Some of my other members are members of the Democrat Party. I can't say that for. They really took this session pretty hard, but you know, I've been in business for 40 years. You got to keep moving forward.
Well, let's take a call here for Senator Herman Birchinger of Grants Pass. Derek and Talent, welcome to the exchange.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Just a couple observations from the comments the senator was making. It seems like, Senator, you're doubling down.
Derek, are you there?
Hello.
Well, we seem to have lost Derek. I'm not sure what happened there. Okay, well, let me try with the button one more time. Derek, you there again? Nope, he dropped the line. Okay, not sure what happened. Doubling down, let's go with the little bit we heard there. I mean, you're defending the kinds of things that were done by the Republicans. You get some people calling it a walkout. You're calling it denying a quorum, but you're thinking this is the way to go. This is what you had to do.
No, I don't think it's the way to go, and I think if you look at my comments in the press, I'll say that's an extremely hard decision, and my biggest fear is it'll be used in the future every time somebody doesn't want to get their way, whether it's a Republican or a Democrat. I don't think it should be used that way at all. I think what brought us to the point is this is a huge issue that would affected every Oregonian, and we overwhelming the emails, letters, people coming into our office that were against it. We've never seen in any other legislation. And in my 7 years there, and people that have been there longer than I have said the same thing. So this was a little bit different.
What was the time period, Senator, on phasing into the bill? I mean, it's not like all the impacts of the additional costs for fuels would have been felt right up front, right?
Well, the problem with that bill is there was so much rulemaking to take place after the bill would pass. We have no idea what that was going to look like because the legislature has no authority over the rulemaking process.
All right, so the legislature writes the basic outline, and then the agencies have to do the work beyond that. Before we go, a final question here because we're almost out of time, Senator. Do you and the governor have moments with each other where you realize, oh, that's the position you're coming from?
No, I think we both, you know, Governor Brown and I actually have a really good relationship. We work on a lot of hard issues. You know, we're both being pulled our political ways for various reasons, and I think that's easily understood. But I do think that when I did bring up the point to the governor that she does represent all of the state of Oregon now that she's not in the legislature, you know, I think she's thought about that. At least I hope she has. And that is really the big difference. When you're a legislator, you're representing a district of about 165,000-170,000 people. And so that's where you take your pulse. But when you're governor, you're representing 4.2 million people. So that's a lot bigger pulse to take and probably a lot harder to make a decision.
All right, Senator Herman Bertschinger from Grants Pass, the Senate Minority Leader. Thank you so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you. You have a great day.